Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome back to the Handmade Podcast, episode, what episode are we up to? 38, episode 38, day late, 38.
Wow, that was perfect.
That's why we go.
It's just another beautiful week here at the Handmade Podcast, and we all actually just got to see each other a few days ago, so this feels repetitive, but how are you guys doing?
It's good. Funny when you just said it's a good week here. I was like, we almost live together. Like everything, like this is like the Handmade Podcast land where we just stay and live. And you know,
one day.
But yeah, someday that would be fun. No, it was good seeing you guys. It was a lot of fun, and Jimmy makes it fun too, and Aaron.
Yeah,
but
that was a good little day.
Yeah,
good day trip.
Where'd we go? Where were we? Do you want to tell people?
We went to the Monger's Market on Sunday. It's only open on Sundays. For those of you who've never been there, Monger's Market is a 70,000 square foot antiques mall with the craziest shit you'll ever find on the East Coast, right off of 95 in Bridgeport, Connecticut.
Is it 70,000 square feet?
It's more. It's the first floor is 70.
Yeah, the first floor she told me is 75,000, and then the second and third floor, I think she said are 40,000 each.
That's insane.
So all together they've got, and then there's the other, the foundry building or whatever it is, the boiler making building.
Boiler room.
So
or something.
That on top of everything, it's got to be close to 200,000 feet of just like all industrial revival antiques.
I wonder if they're going to open a restaurant there. The boiler.
That's a good idea. That's a good name.
Derek, you could bring your smoker, you and Paul.
Yeah.
They just got to
be getting a good kickback from the taco truck, because I'm sure that taco truck does well in the summer.
Yeah. They really got to be open on Saturdays, too. Don't you think?
Yeah.
2 days.
I could see before, like, when he was running around.
Yeah, but now he's got more people.
Himself. Now he's got more people and stuff like that. But the place is amazing.
And
it's just amazing how far it's come. I mean, has it been, like, 3 years since we first
three
went there?
3 years.
I think so.
Three years since they opened, she told me.
Really? Because I remember.
And they've owned it, for
9 years,
so it took them 6 years to get it to opening capacity.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
It's just nuts. I mean, if you're from around this area, even if you're not, it's really worth the trip. It's just crazy. It's hard to explain, you know, just the stuff they have there, but it's just it's a lot to take in.
Yeah.
It really is. So, skip church and go on a Sunday.
It's unbelievable. So for those of you that have never been there, I have no idea what it is. It started out as basically like a, I would say probably 60,000 square feet of just the owner's collection of antiques that he's gotten over the years.
And like industrial salvage type stuff.
Yeah.
Really.
Yeah. All industrial salvage, but all stuff that he had gotten himself.
Yeah, which is insane.
And then slowly he, you know, his intention was always to build it up and bring in what he calls mongers, a.k.a. vendors, antique vendors, and not just antiques, but vendors that would sell stuff, you know, like antiques, or there's some furniture makers and all sorts of different people. And now when we first started going there 3 years ago, it was when Derek and I first met Paul. I would say that he probably had three or four vendors there, and you know, it was just sort of picking up. Now he's, what does he have, 60 vendors there?
Yeah. Most, half of the space I think is now vendors.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's just unbelievable. It's such a crazy, place.
I can see him moving that whole first floor completely to vendors.
That's what he's going to do.
And just moving his stuff on the second and third floor.
That's his plan, yeah.
What Mm-hmm. I know you guys have talked to him more. Was he like an antique collector, or what was his deal? Like, what did?
I think he had another place.
I'm pretty sure.
Yeah.
I wouldn't think you just start that business.
No,
I mean, they're definitely doing it right, and they know what they're doing. But
I forget where he had another
place.
Man,
it's a lot.
Was it in Stanford, maybe? He had a smaller place.
I think you're
place.
Right. You know, he did tell me that before.
Yeah.
He didn't have a place.
Yeah.
That's right. But it just, it's the craziest stuff. I mean, it's funny because, like, I go in there, I'm obviously a lot older than you guys. But, like, one of the first things that always struck me was that first aisle when he used to have it, you know, probably 15 feet up and then to the ceiling of, like, waste baskets, baskets.
Yeah.
Like, growing up in school, every school classroom had one of those waste baskets, you know, the drab olive green.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was like somebody's job. There was like two of them in every room, you know. And it's just funny. It's like, oh, wow, whatever happened to those? Well, you know, he's got all 400 of them, you know, from some of the public schools, you know. But it just, you know, it's just funny the things he has, you know, the light fixtures, the, you know, the faucet, just everything.
Old trunks, doors, all the old bins, you know. Metal bins.
I love, like, the old doors he has, like, to the old boiler rooms and the security glass and, you know, the
safe
grates.
Doors.
And Yeah, Jimmy buys a safe door.
Yeah.
It's like,
from a time that was, like, pre-plastic.
Yeah.
Where everything, you know, everything was made out of metal or glass, which is cool.
It's funny because the pizza parlor I work in, that's how every one of our buildings is. You know, it was built like in the 40s or whatever, you know, during, you know, the Cold War, and it just, everything was made to last and survive an explosion, and it's just really got that like old charm, you know.
But
it was a lot of fun. It was a good time.
Yeah, definitely.
Wow.
There's a lot of unique stuff there that I feel like everyone can kind of like, you know, find.
You got to go see it at least once if you're within.
You got to go see it at least.
The tri-state area.
We'll do a field trip there 1 week.
Yeah.
So many people there, that'd probably be a bad idea.
Well, what do you mean, like?
We'll do a handmade podcast, you know, field trip.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Invite like 50 people to go. That's all we need there, you know? Really swamp the place.
They're
but
at
no,
max
it's
capacity. I mean,
yeah. Well, yeah. That's what he was saying. He was having some issues with, you know, with the parking and everything.
The
like
city's
that,
so
you know?
Stupid. It's like
I know.
The place is like literally Afghanistan, and this guy like cleans up this old. All the, if he didn't come by that building and clean it up and fix it up, it would have had, you know, like crackheads in it, and they would have started a fire and the thing would have burnt down and a firefighter would have got hurt trying to put out a fire in a 150,000 square foot building. Like, it's like the guy's doing the city a favor and they're going to come like bust his balls because he's got because some, you know, fine little classifications and what type of business it is. It's like so crazy.
Yeah.
I don't get it.
It is nuts, but that's the way it works, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's tough. I mean, it's and like just to keep that place open, you know, what it costs, like what his taxes are, what he paid for it, you know.
Yeah.
But hey.
Yeah. Then to recoup the cost for all those years he had it and it wasn't even open, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
It's like, you know, it's a lot of dough you got to bring in, but. But Paul, it was nice to see you shop and your truck.
Yeah.
The truck looked amazing.
Thank
you. The
shop
looks great. You know, everything looks like it's getting put back together. So
yeah.
It's good to see, you know. Good to see. But what else?
I don't know. What else you guys been working on?
Chris brought up some of his projects, but he didn't end up working on it.
No,
tell
I
us
didn't
how
do
your
shit.
Project worked.
I actually went home and worked on them that night.
Did you?
Because we got home kind of early. So, yeah, I'm working on those bike racks. I got a heart-shaped bike rack and a peace-sign-shaped bike rack that almost turned into a Mercedes logo. But, you know, it's so funny. So anybody that was following me on Instagram noticed this. So I make this round 36-inch, you know, bike rack and 36-inch ring, and it's supposed to be a peace sign, you know, like a hippie peace sign. So I designed it in SketchUp. I sent it to the customer. I've been going back and forth with this guy since like November on these things because he owns a tattoo shop, and he wanted two new bike racks for outside the tattoo shop. So this guy's a tattoo artist too, and you know, I feel like I have a pretty good like art brain where I recognize shapes and logos. So we all, me, him, Macklin, and anybody else that saw these, Matt, none of us noticed that what I thought was a peace sign was just like a three triangles, like a Mercedes logo. I was missing the bottom. So yeah. I make the ring, and then Macklin's there, and I print out, and I'm filming this for YouTube, so I print out, and I don't know if you guys have ever done this, but when you have a complicated angle in SketchUp, if you just print the angle, you can use a protractor on the printout and it'll be to the angle. So like, you know, instead of going on SketchUp and measuring the angle and getting some arbitrary number, like, you know, 61 and a quarter degrees, I just print it out on a sheet of paper and then I put my angle finder on the paper and it gets me usually close enough. I do that. I cut these three mitered pieces of tube and I get the three, you know, legged triangle. Like, it looks so good. Like, I cut these miters.
I was gonna say, you cut them nice.
And I'm looking at it and I got Macklin's there. I'm like, oh man, I'm fucking nice. I did it nice.
Oh, I remember this.
And then I look at it and I go, Mac, I don't know. Something doesn't look right. I said, I think I gotta lower the triangle down. I said, it just doesn't seem right. And so we look it up and both of us look at each other. We're like, how did neither of us notice that this thing's just completely wrong?
So that's how you found out.
Oh yeah, because looking at the three triangles, I thought it should have been like proportionally lower, you know, so that the center would have been longer.
Yeah.
So I'm like, yeah, you know, I left all the tubes long. Let me just check before I get the tubing notcher going, and that's when I noticed it. And I'm like, oh my god! So I wound up, I had enough material on those tubes where I just was able to use the tubing notcher and just, you know, notch them and then cut a new tube. It was pretty fun. I posted a little video on Instagram rolling the tubing for the heart, and everything I feel like looks pretty good.
Thank God you didn't weld it up and deliver that.
Oh,
thing,
and
like,
get it painted or powder coated, that would suck.
I know. And then I was like, oh well, what I can do is like weld a pipe to the bottom, but then like they wouldn't have been perfectly straight. So I just, you know, obviously if I'm gonna do these, I want to do them once. I want to do them right. So yeah. That would have been a real pain in the ass if I would have done it wrong and had to redo it. I would have just wound up scrapping it. And considering I paid $120 a stick for that tubing, there really isn't any room for error on this one.
Tube is gone up like crazy. We're just having to reprice a job because of it. We were getting tube for like 50 cents a pound. And now it's like over $1 a pound. For structural tube. Yeah, it's insane. Because apparently during COVID, this is what we learned from the steel supplier, they said that there wasn't any scrap coming in during COVID. And now that everything's opening back up again, people need steel, but there was no scrap to supplement the price of the steel. So now they're just having to like make the steel like from new
from
iron
raw
or whatever. Or yeah, so now it's a lot more money. And they're doing a little bit of gouging on top of that. Nightmare, yeah. So,
yeah.
But
it's really, I mean, I've been reading a lot about lumber and steel and just
the lumber
prices.
Insane.
It's crazy. It's really crazy. It's going to be just bad. It's just bad for everyone.
There's no one wins. Is it like technically like socialist if the government like can control that, like to make sure they don't gouge? Is that
communist? I think
that's like, communist. Yeah,
might
yeah,
be,
yeah.
Might be communist. I don't know. Communist or socialist?
It's some type of ist. Well, capitalist too is another ist, but it's not capital. Yeah. That's not capitalist. I guess it'll balance itself back out eventually.
It does. It does. It crashes. Yeah. It comes back. Like, you know, people get hurt. People lose their jobs.
But what happens?
It all evens out in the wash.
I guess. You know, one company, they're all gouging now, but then one lumber mill will say, you know what, let's drop our prices a little bit to beat out the other guys. And the other guys will say, okay, we got to drop our prices a little bit, and then it'll eventually come back down and even out to where it should be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, my buddy that owned a scrapyard, they used to just, there's like, you know, a couple roads locally that just had all the scrapyards, And he'd tell me, he said they'd call each other, you know, every couple of days just to make sure they're all basically charging the same price.
That makes sense.
So, you know, so they all just kept them high, and you really had no choice, you know. And you just kind of went to who you wanted to go to, but they all just kept the prices, you know, fixed together, you know, and that way nobody really screwed each other, you know.
Yeah,
but,
yeah.
It's just, you know, it is, but it is, I mean, it's crazy because just to think of, like, people that, you know, we're planning, like, additions and stuff like that. Like, my neighbor, he's doing an addition right now. Or actually, I should say a renovation. His kitchen. And he's just saying about how everything's so expensive. And it just sucks because a lot of people aren't going to be able to do those type things. And, you know, that's how, you know, recessions start. You know, it's just like, it's just a domino effect, you know. So now they're not getting it. So now the carpenter, you know, doesn't get the job, so now he doesn't buy the truck, and then the, you know, the guy doesn't get to deliver the car, and then the gas doesn't go into the truck, and, you know, and then the next thing you know, everybody's out of work. So, I don't know. Keep supporting me on Patreon, please, so I don't have to be affected by this. I'll try to entertain everybody while they're out of work, but I'll do my part. But no, it is. It's sad. It's just crazy because that's just how it goes, you know. So we'll see. You know. Hopefully things will bounce back, you know.
When you're as heavily invested into crypto as I am, you don't have to worry about these things.
I'm going to go out on a limb here and just say, please do not accept any financial advice from myself.
I was just talking to Jeff.
The Handmade Podcast.
Me and Jeff had a conversation about this because last night I posted, it was late last night, and you texted me about Doge. And so I posted a story of, I said I'm starting a new hedge fund called the Handmade Investments or something.
Yeah.
And then we deal exclusively in crypto. I said, this is all a joke, which is, I'll get into this in a minute. Are you showing me your profits in Doge? See, you know what, Jeff?
I haven't sold it yet.
You haven't? Oh, my God, Chris. Jesus Christ. This kid never sells at the right time.
No, I want to wait till it's worth nothing.
It's not a good story.
But anyway, so I post this story, right? And clearly, to me, I thought it was a joke. Because why the hell? What is? I mean, it doesn't even make any sense that I would start a hedge fund. I don't even know how to do, like, how you could possibly do that. But I was talking about Doge. Yeah, I don't even know how to spell it, probably. And then what else did I say? I said we deal exclusively in crypto, and I showed my how high
NFTs.
Doge went. And NFT, yeah, and how high Doge went. Yesterday night, and I'm getting all these messages from people like, whoa, that's so cool. This is what people are telling me. Like, they think I'm serious. Which, at first, I'm like, God, these people are...
Send me a check.
I'm like, God, these people must be stupid, but I really thought about it, and I'm like, this just shows that what I'm saying now, like, in today's day and age is not that crazy compared to all the other people you see on the internet saying things just like this.
Yeah. Well, the thing is now, with what happened with GameStop and what happened with AMC is that everything that everyone says, every like half-ass stock tip, you have to take somewhat seriously, because if your crazy cousin or some guy you follow on Instagram with one follower had posted, hey, buy GameStop at $2 or whatever it was, and you said, hey, you know what, like, I trust Bob, and you bought it, and it went to the $400-$500, you know, people made hundreds of thousands of dollars.
But people also lost hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Yes, 100%.
Because as many people that made money, there's just as many that lost money because someone had to lose for someone else to win with these extreme, you know, these like, they call them like meme stocks now.
Meme stocks, yeah.
Which, like, this, it's crazy, like, people really do need to be careful. This is probably what Jeff wants me to say. People really do need to be careful with their money and what they're doing, because if you think you're just going to, like, go on Reddit for, like, a couple days and, like, all of a sudden start investing money, like, it's just not going to work out. Like, I will give you a legit tip that came, my friend Warren told me, Warren Buffett. He said the best thing you could do is just put money in an index fund and just leave it there and never look at it. Like, that's a legit, like, stock tip. Because if you don't know what you're doing, which I don't either, like, I put money in an index fund, but I like to fool around a little bit and do stuff on my own. But the best thing you could do is just put money in an index fund and let it sit there for 40 years, and it'll be worth a ton of money by the time you know, you're ready to retire or whatever. That's legit stock tips. Jeff, you can't say anything bad about that stock tip.
Yeah, or you take your you refinance your house, you yeah, dump it all into some all into, half-ass,
all into and then, BitClout, into Chris, yeah, Bit- into Chris, into the. Here's what the real move is, guys. You take out a loan, you refinance your house, and you put all the money into make everything shop coin on BitClout.com.
Mm-hmm. Dude, my coin is worth $215. No, I'm worth $60 a coin right now.
Dude, this. This is going to be like the downfall. Just like saying. This is, there's going to be some type of crash. Like there's got to be some sort of repercussions for all this shit because it's not legit. It really isn't. Like Bitcoin's kind of getting legit, but still, no one really knows what the hell it is. No one. It doesn't have anything behind it. This stuff's getting real crazy. NFTs, all these things. Not you know what non-fungibles are, Derek? You know what a fungible is?
Yeah, yeah. But a kid I work with did that.
Did what?
Sold his house, took all the money, invested it in the stock market, and wanted to be a day trader, and lost it all.
Of course.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it was crazy when it happened. It was like,
dude, the freaking...
you know, everybody was making a ton of money, you know, and nobody could figure out why these people were making all this money. And it's just like, you know, I don't understand it, but it's like, it just, it's nuts. I don't know why people play like that, but it just, he had a wife and two little kids, too.
Oh, God.
Yeah, he's living with his in-laws.
Yeah, the other thing about it, too, is people don't realize that you don't just make this money. You have to pay tax on this money.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
that was another thing I've been reading about people that made money during the GameStop thing. Like, they made a lot and then lost it. If you don't file your taxes correctly, you got to pay the IRS. The IRS is way better at finding out what you made than they are at finding out what you lost. You got to tell them what you lost. Yeah. And most of the time, people are lying and telling them what they lost.
Yeah.
But if you make, you know, if at one point your Robinhood account had $300,000 in it because you like struck gold on GameStop. And then you burned it all, you still made $300,000. That's when Robinhood goes and gives over its financials. So people are going to get hit with crazy, crazy tax bills from all that shit. But anyway, so BitClout, I don't know what it is.
It's a total scam.
It's a total scam. Two people asked me about it today, and I didn't even know what to tell them.
I don't even know if I'd want my name on that. You might want to delete that thing, honestly.
Well, that's what I was wondering is, like, did I, like so, somehow sign over like my intellectual property when I made the account.
Dude, who knows? Like I was DMing Jeff about that too. I go, yeah. I go, Jeff, I'll give you one Paul Pinto coin and I'll give you an NFT. And he goes, gee, thanks. That was the end of our conversation.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
I don't know. That's too much. Like, is Ben Ueda doing that? Shit too, we got a Ben Ueda coin.
Yeah, he jumped right in on it, and he claimed that he was going to be posting all his new designs to BitClout first.
What is BitClout? It's also like a social media
platform.
It's
like Twitter. It looks exactly like Twitter. Did you go on the website? It looks exactly like Twitter. I don't know what it is. I have 14 followers. My coin is worth $60, but for some reason, my wallet, actual coins that I own $1 of coin.
They probably just give that to you.
I don't know. Oh, wait, but no, but I own some of myself. Okay, all right. I get 10% of all the purchases of my own coin. So in my wallet, I have $60 of my own creator coin because that's about how much my coin is worth. Dude, I don't understand this shit. I don't know.
My market cap is
$647.
Hook up my bank account to that website.
Oh no, I don't have any hookup. I didn't hook anything up. And what's crazy too is what I didn't realize is you can't buy anything on BitClout with money. You have to buy it with Bitcoin.
Oh, here we go. So they're just
little dribs and drabs of Bitcoin. It's a big pyramid scheme.
Here's what this is. Yeah, this is them harvesting Bitcoin and selling what people think is something of value.
Mm-hmm.
And when this whole thing crashes and everyone who sold Bitcoin to buy this crap coin, is what I'm going to call it, shit coin, they're going to end up with nothing. And whoever the scammers are that started this, they're going to have a bunch of Bitcoin.
Yeah.
Dude, this is a little Alex Jones, but some people are saying Bitcoin's from the Chinese.
Could
they sent over SARS-CoV-19 and they sent over Bitcoin. That's, I don't know.
This one's getting deep. This episode might get deleted.
I was going to say, don't get
Dude, we might get shadow banned from this.
You know what? I'm willing to take that chance. We haven't done enough controversial things. I got my racquetball glasses on. I'm ready to go.
Chris
all right?
just got an epoxy river table poured on his eye. I mean, we
Len,
don't know what's going on.
You want to talk about that? You guys want to talk about that?
Yeah.
Use that as your new tool.
This is my new tool. I got a bionic eye. So, did you guys look at the picture I sent you of what they did to my eye? The little graphic.
No.
Oh, I'll send you guys the picture. So, on Monday, I got what's called cross-linking surgery, I don't know who came up with the name because nothing about it makes any sense to me.
They put a chip in your eye. That's what they did.
So instead of getting the COVID vaccine in my arm, they just dripped it into my eye. No, so basically I have an issue with both of my eyes. The cornea of my eyeballs has become deformed for some reason. They don't know why. And what they did was they basically took a Q-tip and abraded the lens of my eye, which is a really lovely feeling. The doctor literally just held my eye open and rubbed the Q-tip on the lens of my eye. And then they spent an hour. Literally 1 hour, every 2 minutes, the girl had a timer. Oh. And every 2 minutes, she would open my eye and put this yellow eye drop, and she would paint it on my eye. So I would see just yellow wash over my eye every 2 minutes for an hour. Then she held my eye open with this metal, pliers. I'm about to send you guys a photo.
Yeah, I know that. Yeah.
Held my eye open with the metal pliers that they use when they have to dig out a piece of metal from your eye. For 30 minutes, they blasted my eye with a laser to harden the resin that they had been putting on it. It's like a vitamin B resin. And basically all they're trying to do is
total
stop.
I
was going to say, I have that resin.
Yeah. I just sent you guys a photo of what it looks like. Yeah, so basically that's what they did. So I laid in the chair for 30 minutes with this laser burning into my freaking eye. And it's so disorienting because you have to, you start to fall asleep even though your eye is wide open because the whole room is black. And you start to feel like you're never going to be able to see again because you're looking at this red light. And all of a sudden, you start seeing shapes, and then it gets dark, then it gets light again. Then the girl's telling me, no, you got to look right at it because I'm, I guess while I'm falling asleep, my eye's probably drifting, maybe down.
Yeah.
So she's like, no, you got to keep looking straight ahead. I'm like, oh, okay. And then continually she's putting more shit in my eye.
I couldn't do it.
After it was over, they give me Vicodin, and I'm like, I'm all set. I'm good. I don't need to take anything. Yeah. About 2 hours later, I'm like, leaned over on the couch shaking. I'm in so much pain. I feel like I'm gonna throw up. I'm sweating. Oof. and it's because my eye is just, it feels like somebody punched me. Ever been punched in the face and your eye socket hurts but your eye also hurts?
This
was like that, but it just was my eyeball. My eyeball was killing me. I felt like I was gonna go blind. It was horrible. I couldn't see shit. It was not good. And that was only one eye. So the next eye they're doing on Friday.
Have fun on
Lucky
Friday.
Me.
This Friday?
Yeah.
Wow.
So, and now for the next month, I have to be really careful not to get anything in my eye. So right now I have a contact lens in, a clear contact lens. My whole eye is blurry, which sucks.
I was going to ask you, it doesn't seem any better yet?
It wouldn't seem better yet anyway, but even still, I have a clear contact lens in there. So if I close one eye, it looks like, you ever take your phone out of your pocket and your camera screen is hazy, fogged up?
Yeah,
that's how it looks like through my eye all the time now.
So I'd want to make sure my vision's good.
That's
before
what
I
said.
Well, yeah, so they check, the whole thing is they do the post-op of the first eye Friday morning, and then they do the operation on the left eye.
Right, I'll let it go then.
Yeah. Anyway, Angela wasn't too happy because the doctor came in for about 3 seconds, and then his 28-year-old medical assistant did the rest of the procedure. She was like, excuse me, who's this broad coming in to do this laser on your eyeball?
Who's doing this laser on my man?
Exactly.
It's the cleaning lady.
Right?
That's the way
Seriously.
It always works, though. You know?
Right? He walks in for 2 seconds, looks, he goes, oh, yeah. He goes, you're going to be, you're going to do great. And then he leaves. I'm like,
Yeah.
Okay.
But you have a kid. That's what they do when you have a kid. They the nurses do everything, and the doctor comes in, basically catches it as it falls out.
Yeah, let's give the nurses a little bit of a pay raise.
Yeah, seriously. My wife could use a pay raise.
Yeah.
Oh, that's, yeah. She's
and then sad. Afterwards, the girl said something to me. She goes, oh, your wife is, like, really nervous. She had a lot of questions. I go, well, she's a nurse. So that's her job. Like, she's my medical yeah. advisor. Like, yeah. you know, her job's to ask questions. And she's like, oh, okay. Yeah.
So when's it going to be better, your eyes, like your vision, like they say? Like,
it can take, weeks? Like, it can take, like, a month for it to fully, I guess, heal. I don't know. And then after it's all done, then I get to like learn about what, like how I can best solve the vision issues I have. It's probably going to be with like a hard contact lens.
Yeah.
Which I've been reading about. I don't know. I mean, I don't really want to have to wear glasses.
Yeah.
I just feel like it would be,
Excuse me.
I don't know. I just feel like it's going to be a pain in the ass.
It is.
You know, like, dude, isn't it so inconvenient?
Dude, mine aren't spotless.
Oh, yeah.
Nuts. Not
same way. I'm the same way.
But I meant to tell you, if you use coupon code TBDerek15, you can get 15% off that epoxy.
That very epoxy.
Yeah, when you get right really? Next eye done. Yeah, yeah, through wow. title. So.
Dude, it'd be so funny if you walk into the doctor's office, they have a bunch of pieces of cut up colored pencil.
Like, she goes, yeah, I'm using what's left over from the procedure.
Nick Cimetti in here?
Nick Cimetti's doing a video of an eyeball made out of colored pencils.
Yeah, when I'm done, she takes what's left in the drop and puts it in a bowl with colored pencils.
You walk in, Nick's in there with a lathe.
Yeah.
Like, covered in shit.
She takes a scalpel and puts the scalpel blade in the epoxy, makes a throwaway utility knife.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Oh, God.
That's for you, Jimmy.
I don't know.
He got
kills
so
a few sea turtles along the way.
Yeah.
Oh, poor Jimmy.
He should have invented the 12 pack can holder.
Oh, I know, like, right? Just
kill more sea animals.
So that's what I've been doing this week. I can't work in the shop. I'm not allowed to drive. I can't work in the shop. And when I go outside, my eyes hurt. So I wear my, I don't know where they are right now, but I got these. Oh, here they are. Wait, ready for this, Paul?
Oh, God.
Got my Rick glasses, God. Baby.
Oh, my God.
I got the UV lens on the side. These are the, what are these called? The solar shields. So I got to wear, so when I go out, I got to wear the racquetball glasses.
Oh, my God.
And then the solar shields on top.
Yeah, you're better off just staying in at that point.
Yeah.
Disaster.
I know. Oh, shit. But no, it's actually, I'm a little concerned because for the next month, I can't get anything in my eyes.
Yeah.
So I got to be really careful in the shop. For the next month, I got to wear, like, the full shield.
I had that clamp thing done when I got that metal in my eye. Mm-hmm. And it's amazing. Like, it just, like, they hold your eye open like that. Just so
horrible.
Gross. It's like your eyeball is, like, something that's not supposed to be touched. There's a couple spots in your body that you just don't touch, and the eyeball would be one of them.
Dude, when this guy Q-tipped my eyeball, I could see, because he's holding my eye open, so I can see the Q-tip going across.
Yeah.
It literally looked like this.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah. The other spot,
right
you
on your eyeball.
Q-tip either.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, well, yeah, there's a couple Q-tip spots that you're not really, you don't really want to be Q-tipped.
He is one of them, definitely.
Paul, if you can keep yourself from getting Q-tipped anywhere, I recommend it.
Yeah.
I have a feeling Derek's had the Q-tip before, too. It's not a good feeling. Keep the Q-tips to a minimum.
So what else other people been making?
Yeah.
Paul, what have you been making? I know
you've Paul,
been
what
making
have you been
some
making? Your truck's done, so what, you're retiring now?
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
I wish. I'm about to... Listen, I'm not... I don't want to hear any more excuses about the not doing the podcast because we got dinner, we got shit. I should be at the shop right now loading like $60,000 worth of steel onto a truck because the truck's showing up at 8 a.m., and the shit's not done because I came here to do this podcast.
Lunch
time. I got an 18-wheeler showing up tomorrow at 8. That's got to be loaded with stuff. And the
and that's
stuff
going
is not
to Massachusetts?
Yeah.
Why didn't you tell me? I would have brought it home with me the other night.
You could have. We could have threw it right on top of the table.
Yeah. Yeah, just threw it on top. What's going up there? All those...
all those pieces that need to get galvanized.
So did you get the sample? I forget what you were saying.
I got just that one sample that they gave us. It was like literally a piece of paper with like black paint on it. I'm like, thanks, guys.
Yeah.
Great. Here's $100,000. Good luck.
That's what black looks like. Thank you.
Yeah.
So how do you... To load those, do you have to like put them on pallets? Or how do you
no.
do that? Would you just physically place them on the truck?
I have a banding... I just actually got it from Uline, banding cart and all the different tools for the steel strapping. Which I'm doing on all the different things. That's actually pretty cool, like how that all works, how that whole system works. But everything is getting steel strapping, and it's just getting loaded in bundles and strapped down. We have to do like a whole count of all the different pieces because there's literally hundreds and hundreds of pieces. And they can't, you know, lose any. So.
Yeah.
What's the lead time on that? Like, so tomorrow it's going to leave, and then what do you expect it back in, like a month?
Yeah, probably about a month. In the meantime, I have to make all the aluminum tables for that same job. So when that's out there, I'll be making the aluminum tables, and then everything will be done at the same time, and we'll go deliver them on the beach.
I was going to say, well, that's good. Timing's pretty good so far. Yeah. I mean, provided it's a month, you should be in good shape.
Yeah. I'll get the tables done pretty quick. And then, you know, we'll probably just be waiting on the actual galvanizing place. They said, like, 3 to 6 weeks, so who knows? Like, we're at their mercy. So, it'll be interesting, though. Somewhere near Boston or Massachusetts, somewhere. I'm not exactly sure.
Yeah. Let me know. I'll go by and check.
Yeah, check up on them. Make sure they're doing a good job.
Yeah. I'll make sure to see if the shit's sitting in the yard still.
Yeah.
Right. But just keep drive by every day and just take a photo of all the shit sitting outside.
You got to see what I was doing, though, because there's a million weld nuts with threads welded in. So we're using 3/4 inch long by half 13 bolts to assemble this whole thing. And so I literally was at back and forth to Home Depot's today, buying every half inch washer they had, plus all the washers we got from the actual like nut and bolt place that we go to. And we're still, I think, going to be short. So tomorrow I got to run out and get more, because I had to take the 3/4 inch bolt, and the weld nut is it's a half inch of threads. So I had a 1/4 inch to make up. So I had to stack 3 washers for every nut and then use a high heat anti-seize compound on every single bolt and then put the thread the bolts into the weld nuts to make sure the galvanizing didn't get in the threads and mess them up, because I don't want to have to chase out all these threads. And so I get to reuse those 3/4 inch bolts to actually assemble it, and then I'll just keep the washers. I'm not using the washers, but I'm using them as a spacer for now. And that's what we were doing today. Everything's done. I was just, you know, scrambling to get all the bolts threaded in. There's like thousands. There's like over 1,000 bolts and 3,000 washers and stuff. And so we have to do every one by hand and put the anti-seize compound on there, strap them all up. So that's what I was just doing today. And I have to finish up early tomorrow morning before we load everything. But we're almost done.
Wow.
So. Right. Nothing's easy, but.
Yeah. No.
It was easy. Everybody would do it.
Yeah,
that's right.
We would have taken 3 hours to figure out how to put the one bolt in. They strategized.
Yeah.
There's too many cooks in the kitchen.
That's what you're gonna get there. The guy's like, "Oh yeah, we got plugs. We just push in there."
Earplugs. That's what the that's what the powder coater uses. He uses 3M earplugs. Yeah, he just stuffs them in the holes.
Yeah.
I wish it was that easy, but they actually have to sandblast these things. I guess for the black galvanizing or whatever, they gotta blast them, and then this is what they told us to do, because I knew we had to plug them up with bolts. And the other thing is, the reason why I'm using washers is because I can't have that bolt stick past the threads and get the galvanizing on it, and then when I go to back the bolt out, it'll bust that weld nut. So that's why I have to have all those spacers in there. But then I didn't even know to use this. They said you got to use the anti-seize compound because of the heat of the galvanizing will make it seize up. We did everything we could to make sure everything comes out nicely, so we'll see what happens.
I'm
excited to see how those come back. That'll be cool.
They're
really nice. You did a nice job on them.
Thank you.
They're gonna look nicer. Great when it's all set up.
You got to see what's on the beach right now. Oh my god. It's like just plumbing pipe, like black pipe, and then it's all bent because they hit it with like the tractor. All the legs are bent. There's like half the things are falling over. They really need these things. But
How many did you make altogether?
10 that are 12 by 10 feet, and then 10 that are 20 by 10.
Wow.
And now that gets an awning that they already have, or they got new awnings for everything? They're
getting new ones made to fit these ones exactly. So nice. It'll be good.
and all this to just get them in black galvanized versus just doing them all in stainless, or there wasn't the budget for stainless?
It would cost a ton of money to get them done in stainless. Plus, they wanted them black.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I guess you could have done them in aluminum too, maybe, but then, I don't know.
Had them anodized or something.
Yeah, it would have been all broken because, you know, these people, they're going to hit these things with the machines again, like when they go to groom the sand or whatever. Like, who knows? But
nobody
what
cares
they want.
Anymore.
God.
No, dude,
nobody
no one
cares.
You can't.
No.
Like,
no.
You can't rely on anybody to do anything.
The person grooming that beach is so far disconnected from the guy who's writing you the check for that shit.
Yeah.
That
yeah.
I'm surprised. It's funny. I just bid a job for a local village. Who shall not be named. And they quoted these vehicle barriers for outdoor dining.
Yeah.
And they said, and the guy even says to me, he's like, hey, listen, give me a quote for 10 of these and 12 of these. He goes, but honestly, put two extra of each because I know they're going to get destroyed by my guys.
Exactly.
I'm like, yeah. Because it was right. The guy's loading them onto the truck. They're just going to, like, throw them onto the truck. Like, they could be $20,000 each. And you could tell the guys, hey, listen, these are really expensive. They'll go, oh, okay, yeah, yeah, yeah. And as soon as you turn around, they'll just toss that shit right onto the truck.
People
smash them up.
This is, like, why people, I hear all these, like, people complaining about, like, you know, it's so tough to be, like, an employee, which it is tough to, like, you know, work for somebody. But I'll tell you what, it's freaking tougher to be the employer.
100%.
It's a way easier to be the employee. Because, you know, the worst that can happen is you get fired. But if you're the employer, there's a lot worse shit that can happen. And trust me, it's a lot harder. Like, there's not many employers that are just, like, kind of lounging around, like, and have a successful business and don't really do anything. Like, that's pretty hard to do. Like, it'd be almost impossible for me to just, like, you know, have someone else running my company. Because you couldn't rely on anybody. It'd be impossible.
Well, that's it. Just like that little door I made for the boat, the acrylic door. So my brother-in-law, you know, he's got a very successful boat business. He just opened up another, you know, lot and building and everything. And he has, you know, in the springtime and then in the fall, he hires extra people because he's got, hundreds of boats he's got to prep and get in. So this kid's cleaning the boat, and they rebuild the inside battery boxes and all this stuff. The kid falls. Grabs the door, breaks it, right?
Mm.
The door's $1,000, right? And so, like, I look at it, you know, I'm making this thing, and I'm, like, saying to myself, like, oh, this is a nice job. I'm going to make some money. But at the end of the day, I'm going to be sticking it to my brother-in-law because the employee's not paying for that door.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my brother-in-law's got to pay for it. And it's really not fair to my brother-in-law. I mean, it's not fair to me, obviously. I shouldn't be paying for it, and I'm going to make some money off it. But I kind of feel like, if that kid was a customer coming to me saying, hey, I broke the door on my boat, what's it going to cost me, as opposed to my brother-in-law? Because it's like, you know, he wasn't there, it wasn't his fault, and now he's stuck paying for it. So now I feel guilty charging him a lot of money. I hope he doesn't listen to this because I'm going to charge him a good amount of money. But, you know, what I mean?
But then it can't be your responsibility.
Yeah,
you didn't break the door, you know?
No, it's not. And I am going to charge him something fair, but it definitely would have been a lot more because I looked the door up. I think it was $980 for the door, you know? So I figured, you know, I would have charged him, you know, $600 for it.
I was going
to
say, it's worth at least $3,000 if it comes out of your shop.
Well, it's like, you know what I mean? It's like, come on, you know? But, you know, like you said, he's got to pay for it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Not the kid that broke it. So.
Did I ever tell you guys the story about I won't say his name, but you both know have met
Jimmy
him. Jimmy
into it every time.
It's not Jimmy. This isn't Jimmy.
Okay.
But a friend of mine who you guys have both met and are quite familiar with was working on a job site, and he liked to play in the machinery. You know, every once in a while he'd hop in the machine and drive it around.
This ain't gonna end well.
I know the story.
So he's, at this point I was no longer working at this job site, so I wasn't there to witness this. I only heard about it later, and I
Does
saw
he
the photos.
Have a boat that's a Carolina squat?
He might have a Carolina squat boat. So he, you know, he's around the site, and there was very little supervision at this site. Let's put it that way. And so he hops in the Mason's excavator, and he starts backfilling the foundation because somebody's got to backfill the foundation for some reason. He decides that that's what he's going to do. And while he's fingering around with the bucket, he pulls the water main out of the house.
Oh my God.
And granted, now this water main, at the time I had worked on this job, I spent like 6 months tracking down a company that would tap a live main. So like when you have a water main that is on private property, you have to have somebody come in, dig a pit, find the water main, and put, like, you know what a saddle valve is, Paul?
Yeah.
So like basically put a big saddle valve on the main. There's like two companies on Long Island that do it, and they've both been around for over 100 years. So you can imagine the amount of money that these guys have made in their 100 years of like tapping water mains. So we had just tapped this water main, and I don't know if he couldn't find the shutoff or if he kind of just forgot where it was, but I remember getting a photo of him, and you can tell that he'd been up to water up to his armpits, all his clothes soaking wet, trying to plug the end. It's a 2-inch water main.
Oh, my God.
2-inch main. High pressure main.
1,000 gallons a minute. Like,
it's got to be. It's got to be. Flooded the whole basement of the building, flooded the whole foundation.
Dude.
And lucky for him, the plumber was kind enough to come out and fix the connection, which, you know, probably took him maybe an hour. It wasn't a lot of material. And then the damage, there wasn't really any damage because the house was just framed. So
it,
you know, it was
just a swimming pool.
Exactly. Yeah, so he vacuumed out, or he swept out the water. I think that building had good trench drains in it. I don't remember. You know, gave the cesspools a good run for their money. And the plumber took care of it and had some pity on our friend and let it go. And God, the price never, our boss never, I don't know if he knows about it now. I don't know if
the boss never
ever,
found out at
never
first?
Found out.
Wow.
Never found out. The foreman didn't even find out because he wasn't there that day either.
Wow.
Our friend was just at the site all by himself. And next thing you know, he was shoulders deep in some fresh water.
Did someone?
Your friend puts the FU back in fun. He really
oh,
does.
Yes,
yeah.
He does.
He's just funny. He's just,
he's coming up in May.
I used to work with. Oh, it's so
I love
funny
working with him. If I could have my way, it would just be me and him, and we'd have just like a shitload of money to just have like a good time building crazy shit all day.
Why don't you do that? You could do,
you
that.
Do that
soon. Well, I'm trying to convince him to buy a property up by my property so that we can just like have like a
for
demolition
sake.
Ranch.
Oh my God!
So
why
funny.
Not?
We were working one time. We had to go back to the pizza parlor, and we're sitting there, and we go to use the bathroom, and it had like shower. It was like kind of a locker room style bathroom, and so guys would kind of hang out in the bathroom. It was like a lounge and stuff. They had showers, like lockers and stuff, and it was a nice pizza place. But
listen, you
really
get sauce
nice
on you get sauce on you in your hair.
Yeah.
A little cheese or something. You got to rinse it off.
So we're there, and it's here at one of those big sinks. It's a big round sink that everybody can stand at, wash their hands, see it, like it around. And all of a sudden, this guy, he's a plumber, he's working on it, screaming and gets shot off the toilet. He's sitting on the toilet, face forward, right, working on it, and he undoes the thing, and he didn't shut the water off, and
oh
it was the high
God.
Pressure. Dude, it shot him right in the stomach, shot him backwards off the toilet. And he was a little bit chunky. He's on the floor, and he can't get up. He's floundering like a fish, right?
Like a turtle.
And, oh, my God. And we're crying, laughing. He gets so mad at us, dude.
Oh, my God.
He had to strip down, and they have, like, the suits, the Tyvek suits. He went home naked in a Tyvek suit. He was soaked. And it was just filthy floor, but it was so funny. It was just the high-pressure water got him right in the gut. Oh, so funny.
That's probably
so
that
funny.
That happened at my building in Jersey recently. There's some we think that one of the tenants piped into the ejector pump on the first floor with their bathroom. So every once in a while when the rainwater or the snow melt got too much and filled the pit, the ejector pump would kick on and there's no backflow preventer on one of the bathrooms. And apparently I haven't seen this, but allegedly you get four toilets with about 3-foot shots of water comes out,
God.
Hits the ceiling. And it's like rainwater, so it's not like I don't even know if you'd call it gray water because it's not. It's not sanitary, but there is a little bit of there's a little bit of no good inside
there's
the
lines. Yeah,
fecal matters
but,
in the lines.
But now this is part of my job as an adult babysitter during the day. I have to now hire a second plumber to come back and forensically analyze the pipes that were put in by a different plumber because the plumber that put them in is telling me, no, I did everything right. And I'm like, dude,
he's got.
If you did everything right, then somebody's got a fire hose and they're playing a prank on you and they're shooting water up through the ass of these toilets. Luckily, no one's been sitting on them when this has happened. So
we have a manhole that has a it's got to have like an ejector or something plumbed into one of our lines. It's uphill, right? And if you're in the hole, it will fill up with water, and it's like you could set your watch to it. Like every like 4 minutes, it will come on, and water, clean water, comes out of the duct.
Oh my god!
Just for like 4 minutes, and then it shuts off. And it's like, so the kid's like, "Oh no, that's just coming down from like groundwater, is like flow." I'm like, "Dude, it's coming up a hill. It's like it's a Beacon Hill. It's like how's it come up the hill? You know, into the manhole. It's just funny, but it's like almost you could just time the thing, you know. But it's just funny what people do.
That's what the plumber said to me. He goes, "Oh, this has got to be back pressure." I go, "Dude, there's a whole floor below us." And there's floor drains in this room that aren't backing up. Clearly, you guys put something on the plumbing line for the toilets. That's wrong. No, no, no. There's no way. There's no way we did anything wrong. I'm like, all right,
oh
dude.
God.
So now
that's
I got to spend.
Nightmare.
Yeah. So now I got to spend, you know, whatever it is. And
a lot of money.
Thousands of dollars.
Oh, yeah.
To now have. I got to have dye packs put in the toilets. I got to have all this shit done. And
it's
then,
amazing how they trace, like, leaks and stuff. Like, because we work with the water department sometimes. And it's amazing how they do that with the dye and stuff. And just the listening gear. They go around and listen to where it's flowing.
And cameras. Yeah. And now. But so now what I get to do as like I said, the head adult babysitter, the head of the daycare, is I get to go through this whole experiment. And then when it's all done, I get to fix it. I'm not asking the current plumber to fix it. I'm going to have my plumber fix it. And then I get to go to them and I get to go, here's the bill for all the time, everybody's time, the engineer's time, the plumber's time, you know, that's it. Here's the bill. Thank you very much. You won't have any more water fountains in the bathroom anymore. But it's like you can't even treat like some of these tradespeople like adults, because it's like, dude, obviously you made a mistake. Everybody makes mistakes. You know, you just have to say, hey, listen, I'm going to spend a day and I'm going to figure out why this is happening. Not, you know, throw your hands up and go, I didn't do this. There's no way I did this. There's no way. That's my favorite line. There's no way this could be my fault. I'm like, dude, there's always a way. you could have dropped a pen out of your ear when you weren't paying attention. It could have gone down the toilet and clogged the line. You have no idea what happened. So that's this is the fun
good times.
But what do you got coming up next, Derek from Malden?
I don't know. It's just,
wherever the wind takes you, right? Whatever life brings next in your adventure.
You know, it's funny. A lot of people ask me, like, what I got going on and, you know, what I'm doing. And it's, I don't know.
Are you going to be able to be active on social media in your next couple of weeks?
Yeah.
Is that a stipulation?
Yeah, we're going to have, like, a meeting, and they're going to tell us what we can and can't talk about. And, you know, somebody reached out to me. They're like, "Are you playing in that baseball game with Jimmy?" I go, "What?" Like, I guess on his
and that's
podcast,
what Jimmy's been
he's
saying.
Been talking about it. Yeah, he's got like some baseball thing going. But
you're going to the pizza, the pizza pie contest, right?
Yeah,
you're going to the world's biggest
the
pizza pie pizza convention. That's
the biggest,
what it is.
Biggest pizza ever made. But it'll be interesting to see, because I mean, obviously things are going to be said, and you know, it's just you know Jimmy. You just gotta say.
Well, he'll just post whatever he wants to post. So you got to use him. You got to use him as the
guinea pig. Like
guinea pig.
Yeah. So it'll be interesting. But no, it's exciting. I mean, it's fun because like a lot of people. I just got an email. I thought it was you actually. I was messaging the guy, and you're like, "Oh, I'm gonna send a link for the podcast," and I click on it. And it's a guy asking me about a sign, and I reply back to him. He goes, "Wow, that's the quickest response I've ever gotten back." I'm like, "Oh, I'm actually waiting to start a podcast." He's like, "Oh, sorry." But, I told people, I says, I'm still going to do things. It may take a while because I'm planning on using Jimmy's shop and stuff like that. And he's got a couple projects he's got to get done that he's like, you know, we could work on them while he's here. So that's going to be fun. That's what I'm really looking forward to, is kind of hanging out with him and, you know, being his Aaron, you know, for a little while. And
Aaron will be there, so this is at the pizza convention.
Who
can build the best pizza?
You're gonna do push-ups every 6 hours?
No.
Is that what he's doing? I saw that on your Instagram. What's he doing? Push-ups
every 6 hours?
I didn't know what the hell was going on.
How many does he do?
I don't know. He did like 25.
He didn't do a full
Jimmy
round.
Has a little collar. He pushes a button, and Aaron has to do 25 push-ups.
Yeah, a couple people mentioned that. They said, when's he going to start doing the push-ups? But I said, you know what?
At least he's doing something.
Yeah, I was going to say, I couldn't do what he was doing. So, hey, whatever.
I'm welding the thing, and I'm under the hood welding, and I just hear counting. I'm like, what the hell's going on? As I'm trying to weld. And then I look up, and he's like... Jimmy's like,
it doesn't matter where he is, every 6 hours.
He's got that Marine Corps training. I mean, he's got the discipline.
Yeah.
I used to do 100 a day and then I just stopped. I was like, fuck that.
I'm friends with a guy. I should ask him if he still does it. He used to do, I think, 200 push-ups and sit-ups every morning. And like he was like in good shape, like looked like a marathon runner, but he's gonna be in his 60s now. I know he was doing it well into his 50s. But every morning he does.
Wow.
You know? Max does. My son does. He does a lot of push-ups and sit-ups. But Aaron's just funny. It's funny because your father was bummed out. He's like, geez, I didn't know the big guy wasn't eating pizza, you know, and he didn't eat any of it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, he said
we
if
got
he
pizza
starts,
and
he...
we got cake.
Yeah. That was good pizza, though. I still have some of that pizza.
Oh, you got that margarita?
Every day I've been eating.
I have some
for lunch
tomorrow.
Yeah, my last little pieces for tomorrow's lunch.
Yeah,
but that pizza's so good. Thank you, Peppy. It is. It's just such good pizza. So, but I don't know. I'm looking forward to it. I'm so nervous, but it's everything will work out fine. But it's just exciting, you know. So, hopefully, you know, I can say more next week. You know, I mean,
or less.
We'll be getting exactly. Maybe I'll be fired, and you know. No more pizza for you, but we'll see.
Paul, what do you got coming up next? Now that you mailed off the railings, you're going to make those aluminum tables, you said?
Yeah, I got to make those tables. I got more railing jobs. I got that crazy one, those curved ones that I still need to cut out in the plasma cutter. It's like such a pain in the ass. Like this guy, he's a cool guy. He couldn't have made a more complicated like opening in the floor that I need to match the railings to, and then they got to curve up the stair. It's like so complicated. So I got to work on that a little bit. I got to work on the aluminum tables. We got some other structural stuff coming in that we got to do. Then the big job's going to start up in like a month or two. Finally, that got delayed a whole year.
That building?
Yeah.
Nice.
And then I don't know if I got to probably put a crane in for that freaking job. So maybe
inside your building?
Yeah, so maybe
just to move the beams.
That. Yeah. Cuz it's funny, like let's say the shop, like I just had infinite space. Like the forklift is like by far the fastest thing to use cuz it's so quick. Mm-hmm. You could pick things up, you could fly around. But as soon as stuff starts to get jammed in there, you need a crane to be able to pick stuff up and over things and then be able to place
laterally,
things.
Yeah.
Yeah, place things in different areas. Like let's say I had a beam that was 5 feet from a wall, and then I wanted to put a stack of beams in between the wall and that beam. I'd have to move that first one, put it somewhere else, put dunnage down, put the things where I wanted them, then put that, like the crane, you could just drop things out of the sky, literally, you know, obviously, and put them wherever you need them. So that's, and it's safer too, you know, having something attached to a chain or some type of a chain sling or strap. It's better than just balancing on top of forklift forks, especially when it's 40 feet long or something, you know?
Yeah, and even trying to, like, put a little boom on the forklift or picking up with straps on the forklift is, like, not ideal.
Because then you need two people, one to drive, one to hold the thing.
Yeah.
So that'll definitely be in at some point. Hopefully it's in soon.
Mm-hmm.
But that's that. Then I got to figure out the whole paint booth situation. I got to put some type of paint booth in.
I tell you, I would look like just keep your eyes on Craigslist. I see them all the time, and sometimes nice ones.
Paint booths.
The problem is, I need a 50-foot-long paint booth.
Yeah. That's I'm wondering if like you can get. I don't know.
I think I'm gonna build
a special one. Yeah.
I'm just gonna build. My plan was to just build the walls and then have like a 20-foot door, like two 10-foot sections that slide on a track, and then I could angle in long beams and then just do the inside out of like the shit like RR Buildings uses, like that metal, the aluminum that's pre-painted white, and I'll just use that metal to make all the walls and the ceiling, put bright lights in there, and then just vent out, get those explosion proof fans that you use for paint, for ventilation, and just ventilate everything right out. That's the only solution, because I was talking to my father about it. It's like with painting, like you can cut a beam with a computerized saw, and you can cut a beam with a torch and use a grinder to clean it up, and you'll get pretty much the same result. You can't paint properly with like a half-ass setup, with no light, with dust, with, you know, shit all over.
You should see what they do at Matt's shop.
Dude, they just, well, that's, they just do structural shit. They just, with the shop primer, all they got to do is just glob it onto the beams like that. But if I'm trying to...
that red shit.
Yeah, but what if I get a job where they're like, okay, you need to make 400 feet of railing, and it's all going to be painted black. It's like, I
have someone else paint it.
Yeah, but where? Like, it's going to cost a fortune to ship it somewhere, have it painted. Like, I got to be able to do it in-house properly, not make a mess, not get sick. Because I can't even have my guys work in there when I'm painting. Because this paint I use...
You don't think paint booths, you just got to be so careful, just all the regulations. And
that's the other
just
thing.
Somebody shut your ass down, and it just got to be
get
so
a 50-foot pop-up tent, put it outside. It's not a permanent structure.
Here's
you can
the
paint
next
there
problem.
All day.
I can't paint when it's freezing cold in the wintertime for 6 months out of the year or 5 months out of the year. It's too cold.
Yeah.
So there's no good solution.
If it was easy, everyone would do it.
Yeah. Well, that's why I got to be the one to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So I could be the one making the money.
Yeah.
But I don't know.
What have you been watching lately, Paul? What's on your list? I know you got
Jesus
something good.
Christ. I don't even know. I've been so busy. I was painting till 9:30 last night. I didn't even get home till like after 10.
Paint videos? All right, Derek. We'll skip to Derek. Derek, what
have
you been
watching?
Derek's always got something good.
You know, it's funny. I haven't been watching a lot of anything just because I've been so busy. But let me see real quick. Let me see what I got going on here. I don't want you know, it's so funny because I just was thinking I wanted to mention somebody. Go ahead, Paul.
One thing I was watching as I'm looking through my history was Andrew Camerata just popped up, the guy you were talking to about your property. I was just watching one of his videos on track loaders, skid steers, whatever. He's got
he bought
two at the same time. I want to message him like, hey, you want to sell me one of those,
right?
Because I want to get one and build a boom for it. Oh God, I love like machinery. Like ever since I was a little kid, all I wanted was like an excavator or like some type of like machine, tractors. But
he must do a ton of business to have all this equipment. This shit is not cheap.
Oh no, those things are so expensive. But
he's clearly staying busy. Yeah, I called him about my property. I told you guys.
Yeah.
But I just don't know that I'll be able to make it work because he's not so local. He wants me to handle all the carting. He's in Saugerties, so he's probably like 30 minutes south.
That's where
you know, 40 minutes south.
We got a horse show in Saugerties that my sister goes to.
Yeah. So, I mean, there's obviously no question that he could take down the building efficiently. It's just if he can't efficiently get rid of the trash,
then what's
and
the
I
got
to deal with it, then it's like, you know, then I got to be there for like 3 days. And plus, if he gets held up because the dumpsters get delayed and he has to leave and come back, I'm going to have to pay for it. Versus the local guy, when he did my driveway, he just left his dozer there for like 2 days and went to a different job and then came back. You know, the local dude will be able to leave his equipment there. If, you know, if the dumpster company says, hey, we only have, you know, enough to come three times today, he'll go, okay, and he'll just come back, you know, the next day or whatever, so.
Yeah, you got to get those East Durham prices. Some guy will come up and be like, yeah, it'll be about $850 for this whole thing. And they'll do it, too.
Real.
It's crazy.
Well, you know, if you're up there in May with me, Paul, you'll meet the guy who's going to do it. He's, you know, like I said, he did my driveway.
Yeah, dude,
he did so much work.
He did your gravel driveway, which is more like a boulder driveway. I showed up to the property. I'm like, what the hell? These rocks are the size of footballs. I'm like, what kind of gravel
driveway? Yeah, but listen, it works.
But it makes sense what you said. Like, it'll just wash out because it's so steep. Mm-hmm.
And it didn't wash out this year.
Like,
and but the thing is, he dug out all the mud, put in a 25-foot culvert, tied me into the road, pushed all that dirt away and laid down God knows how many yards of gravel.
For $400 he did that whole thing.
$2,200 he charged me for all that work.
Sold.
It's crazy.
Come on. $2,200. The freaking culvert. I don't know where he got the culvert from. Maybe he like found it on the side of the road somewhere. But even the culvert pipes are like, you know, a couple hundred dollars.
Yeah. Oh.
So, yeah, that's my guy. My guy, Kurt.
Yeah, get Kurt up there.
K&K, he's going to be up there.
What about T with Jimmy's backhoe?
T gave me a price. It was not good.
Really?
T wants to salvage. He told me he would. It was. He wanted $14,000 or $12,000 to take down the building, cart it off.
$14,000?
And he would. That's if he was able to keep all the salvageable material. And I said,
oh, my God.
I said, yeah, you can keep whatever you think is salvageable. Dude, I said, but, dude, I wouldn't build anything with that. I wouldn't build. I mean, like, if that was the price, if everybody else said, hey, it's $20,000, he said $14,000, you know, like, that wasn't the question. The question was like, dude, how much value do you see in this material? But I don't think there's...
What's the price? Well, I don't know if you wanted to say it, but...
No, it's $14,000. That's what he said.
No, that's what his is. What's my other boy's
price?
Oh,
the other price? Yeah. Kurt told me between $7,000 and $10,000 to tear the building
down.
That
makes
more sense. Carting.
Yeah. To get lost, T.
Yeah, I was like...
Give Jimmy back his... Well, Jimmy's got it, actually.
He got his backhoe back. Now it's got no wheels on it. Dude, I saw yesterday they took the wheel. I don't know what they're doing.
I was worried for a minute.
Aaron was working out. He flips the wheels every 8 hours.
Oh, dude, Aaron's strong.
The push-ups.
Yeah. Flips them like tires.
So I've been watching. I don't know if I said this guy before. It's so, you're going to laugh. He's a painter.
Yeah.
His name is 1000.
Oh, I've seen him.
1000. He did the painting for Bobby Duke. He did one for. He does these crazy ass paintings, and I just enjoy watching them because he's kind of like quirky, but they're just real bright and vivid colors. But like a lot of times he'll make up his own rap songs and he'll sing them as he's painting and stuff, and it's just funny. But it's just funny to listen to him, and like he's like amazing like what he paints, but they're not like the people don't look like anatomically correct people, like, and he says how like he wishes he was a good painter, so like he paints these type people till he learns how to paint good people, and I'm like he's amazing how he paints now, you know, like it's just you know, he's obviously making a decent living at it. He's a young kid, and you know, he travels the world painting wall murals and stuff like that, but it's just funny. He just like lives a cool little life with his wife. She's pregnant. I think she might even just had the baby, but it's just funny, but he did a, you know, a painting for Bobby Duke and sent it to him and stuff like that.
This
but
guy's unbelievable. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it's crazy stuff he does. And he does, like, some fun stuff. Like, he'll go to, thrift stores and he'll buy stuff, like, spend $50 buying stuff. Then he paints it and he sells it and he'll tell you, like, how much money he made and stuff. Not, like, bragging or nothing, but, like, he'll buy a suitcase for, like, $2 and he'll sell it for, like, $600 after he paints it.
Hmm.
Yeah, it's just really cool. But it's, like, some of them are kind of, you know, redundant, but, like, some of them are kind of just funny. Like, he does, like, these funny rap songs he makes up and stuff. And just kind of weird, but it's just kind of fun to watch.
That's
it's
cool.
Interesting to see, like, when he paints, like, he'll paint something, like, all orange. He's like, oh, yeah, I need, like, orange undertones and stuff. And then it'll be, like, all green on top of it, and I don't understand all that concept, how it all works together, but it's pretty cool. He was showing a process. It was like an older video I was watching, how like they lay stuff out on grid lines. He does like wall murals, and if he doesn't have room for like a projector or anything, he calls it like a doodle grid, and they just doodle all over the wall, and then they take their photo and they overlay it on a picture on their phone, and then they look at the phone. And it's more precise than a grid line because the doodle has more points of reference.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just funny to watch. It's like they'll make all like real like loose graffiti on the wall and then use that as their grid. You know,
wow.
It's yeah, he's pretty cool. He's got some good stuff. So that's mine.
I'm just noticing that Bobby Duke is like almost at 5 million subs.
Jeez. Is he really?
Well, it's 4.4 million, which is much closer to 5 million than anyone else I know. So
yeah.
God, good for Bobby.
Yeah.
I gotta get some costumes. Jesus Christ.
I know, dude.
I
watch his videos and I'm like, he makes it look so easy. It's just like.
His stuff's amazing.
It is.
It's so, like, out of the box. Like, no one would, no one but Bobby would think, like, to do this stuff. That's why
he's the best.
Yeah.
It's crazy. Bobby Duke is the best. Shout out to Bobby Duke. We're going to put him in the show notes, too. Not like he needs any more eyeballs. But I've been watching something completely unrelated to painting or excavators. Well, I guess semi-excavators. But there's this place in Maine called the Shelter Institute. They teach timber framing.
Uh-huh.
And I was been watching some of their videos about timber frame science and the idea of a timber frame versus a stick frame and, you know, the cost and the strength and the seismic resistance and all this shit. It's really, really interesting. And they have a 3-day class where you go up and, like, basically get all the fundamentals of mortise and tenon cutting and, you know, like, build part of a frame. To raise like the bents, which are the kind of arches of a timber frame. And I went to Vermont and built a timber frame with some guys up there and did basically exactly what they teach in this 3-day class, which is kind of why I'm reluctant to actually like take a class with them, because I feel like it's the same shit I learned in the field for 3 months. But it's just really interesting to me, the timber framing science behind it and why it is, you know, they talk about how the time to do a timber frame and the amount of labor in setting up the actual structure of a timber frame versus a stick frame. Like a stick frame is hundreds of thousands of, you know, hundreds if not thousands of pieces of wood and nails and fasteners. A timber frame is like 80 timbers.
Wow. Uh-huh.
That's it. And it's all held together from mortise and tenon, and then you use what's called a SIP, a structural insulated panel, and the SIPs go on the outside of the frame. And once the SIPs are up, it's a watertight insulated building.
It's probably strong as hell compared to a regular.
It's way stronger than a stick frame. Yeah. And he's in this video, I'm going to put it in the show notes, but he talks about how, you know, it can take you 3 to 6 months to do the timbers, you know, depending on how good you are and how big of a building you're building. And then you raise that whole frame in 1 day with a crane. And then you can put the SIPs on in 1 day. Wow. So you're on the ground for 3 months, and then you're inside in 2 days if you have all your material.
They probably They probably do it all in, like, copy timber framing in shops, and they probably ship it to places too, right? They don't have to just do it on site. Just like steel, the way I would do steel.
Exactly. Right, and when we built
CAD and everything.
Yep. Well, it's not, I mean, it's so simple. Yeah, it's like you don't even need the CAD, you know? But they were talking about how they sell, if you want to build a timber frame, the Shelter Institute, you can buy the plans from them.
Oh, wow.
And the way that they do a timber frame is that every timber has its own shop drawing, just like your beams.
Yeah.
So it'll just show like, all right, it's a 12-foot, 8x8. It's got to be, you know, straight grain, can't have this many knots, whatever it is for structural. But, you know, I'll also put the link to the – there's a video of the frame that I put up in Vermont that I actually shot the day. It took us 2 days to put the frame up. And when we put it up, I shot it with a GoPro. And it's you can see us, like, raising the vents on this huge garage that we built. It was a garage with a loft. And, you know, it's – I've watched it happen. It's amazing. You can literally put up one of these frames – you know, with two or three guys and a crane in 1 day. Nice. So, Shelter Institute, I want to do more timber framing. So, maybe I'll try to convince them to just, like, let me come up there and make YouTube videos instead of having to take a class on stuff that I've done once before. So,
speaking,
I mean, you can only learn how to chisel mortises for so long.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Speaking of wooden buildings and timber frames, I saw something I don't think I talked about on here. I think I was telling my dad about it. Something in like Sweden where they're building like 30 story buildings out of wood with these humongous laminated wood beams. Which I don't know. I don't trust that like in a fire. Sounds like you'd have a nice Swedish bonfire after if someone, you know, like, you know, cook something in their kitchen, they burn the whole entire 30-story building down. Like,
right.
It's too big of a building to be made out of wood, in my opinion.
Interesting.
Like, I don't know. They're saying how many advantages it has, and the wood's so thick, it only burn at this rate per hour. But it's like, yeah, So instead of, you know, 5 hours to burn the whole thing down, it'll burn down in 3 days, but the thing's still going to burn to the ground. Like, how, you could never put that out. How are you going to put a wood, an entire wood skyscraper out? You don't have enough
firefighters. I don't know. I mean, it depends on, I would think if it's laminated, maybe the glue in there acts as a fire retardant. Because, you know, like, the synthetic material burns, like, you know, like fiberglass insulation and shit like that burns, like, it accelerates flame. Versus, like, wood burns, but it doesn't want to burn the way that some of those other materials do, you know. Obviously, steel doesn't burn.
That's what I'm saying. Let's not
Jet fuel.
Let's not start building skyscrapers out of wood. We don't need
I don't know. I think concrete's a little more sustainable.
Concrete and steel doesn't burn.
Yep. It's true.
But whatever.
Anyway. So, that's it. What are you guys doing for the rest of your evening? You know, it's only 9 o'clock on a Wednesday.
I'm going to be pouring some epoxy in a skull.
That's it. Oh, beautiful.
I'm going to have a little chicken karagi don from
there we go.
Some nice restaurant we got. We got a little takeout coming.
Get some peppies.
I already
thank you guys for listening to the Handmade Podcast. Thank you to hold on. I got one more thing to talk about.
Nice.
Hold on. I figured out our Patreon login. All right. So I want to say thank you to our 15 patrons.
Derek, have you seen any of this money? Because I haven't seen any of this money.
We 15 patrons.
It's all in BitCloud, baby.
All right. Let's do some thanking. All right.
Oh my
all right.
God.
We got Glenn Lickers, our first patron.
Of course.
Jeremy
Thank
Spies,
you,
Dan Schmidt, Zach Detine, Full Steam Designs by Chris Powell, Peter Olant, Steve Bennett, Chrissy Steinman, who we know, David Beckwith, Stain the Horse. No, David Beckham, Gordon F. Crago, The Infinite Craftsman, Stanley Shostak, and Michael Nye. Thank you to all of the patrons. You guys, you know, Derek's beard transplant is really costing us a fortune, and it's really great to have people like you supporting Make Everything Big Clout.
A lot of my patrons are a pair right there, so I don't know if I brought a lot to the table there, if you guys brought them to me or what, but I tell you, Steve Bennett's a guy I work with, and you know, we've known each other a long time, and it's just funny because he's just recently, you know, started like turning pens and all that type stuff, and he's just kind of getting involved with like Total Boat and everything. It's just nice to see like he's just so excited about it, and you know, we talk a lot, but it's just nice to see him getting involved with things. So,
yeah,
thank you, Steve.
Thank you, everybody, for being on Patreon, and go follow Derek from Alden on Patreon too.
Yes.
Patreon.com/Derek from Alden, and we'll see you next week.
Thank you.